Years ago, the grandfather of one of my students wrote, "When your world collapses around you, when everything you hope for falls in, sometimes the only thing to do is hold on. Stubbornly hold on." And he continued, "There are times when all that's left is to believe what we cannot prove and accept what we cannot understand. But if in our darkest hour we hang on to some purpose in the universe, and that purpose is love, then even the unbearable seems bearable, and even in the darkness comes a glimmer of light." Well, that grandpa was making sense of a world turned upside down for his own family, but he could have been writing to us or to Hannah, the everyday heroine whose narrative begins the book of 1 Samuel. He wrote, "There is some purpose in the universe, and that purpose is love." Hannah's reality is the Old Testament version of the Kardashian family, really. With multiple wives and predictable jealousies, fad diets, fertility treatments, strong women, hapless men, and a sometimes clueless husband. The story goes like this. There was a certain man, Elkanah, who had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, and Hannah did not. Now, this man used to go up from his town year by year to worship the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah offered his sacrifice, he would give portions to his wife Peninnah and to her sons, all of them and all of their daughters, but to Hannah he would give a double portion because he loved her so much and because she had not been given children. Yet Peninnah, Hannah's rival, used to provoke her severely, rubbing it in and not letting her forget that her womb had not been opened. And this went on for years. As often as Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, Peninnah would provoke her, upsetting her so much that Hannah wouldn't eat. Elkanah, well-meaning but oblivious, would ask, "Hannah, why are you not eating? Why are you so upset? Or am I not worth more to you than 10 sons? I told you he was clueless. I imagine Hannah had tried everything she could think of. And in time, as she began to fret with her sisters and the other women at the well, the advice came fast and furious. Some of them said, "Girl, maybe you have to watch your diet. That might help you conceive." Others said, "Hannah, try to be with your husband when the moon is in the waxing phase. That'll help." And perhaps it was a grandmother who had provided her some herbs and said, "Make a sun tea, baby, and drink it 3 times a day. And Hannah had done all that and more, but still no children. Finally, a close friend said, "Honey, you need to forget the moon and what you eat and drink and just sleep with your husband as often as you can." But the months turned into years, and a sadness took up residence in their house. Now, the custom in those days allowed Elkanah to marry another wife without putting Hannah away, and reluctantly, the couple decided together that this was the thing to do. In some ways, Peninnah was exactly the right choice. She got pregnant immediately, and it seemed like as soon as she weaned one child, she was pregnant with the next. But Peninnah must have been young or spoiled or both, because she lorded her success over Hannah, never letting the first wife forget that the second was fruitful while Hannah remained barren. So it was awful in the house, and it was awful at the market, with Peninnah using every opportunity to vex her rival. And each year at Shiloh, Hannah knew she was going to get humiliated again. But every year, she gathered her dignity, she screwed up her courage, and presented herself before the Lord. Hannah would make sure that her children were fine, that her husband was fine, that even Peninnah was fine. And then she would steal away to the temple and weep. Some seasons the words wouldn't come out at all, and she would just sit there and cry. Other times her heart would so overflow with frustration that if you came upon Hannah on her knees there, you'd think she was yelling at her worst enemy or confiding to her very close friend. And then, at a certain point, her prayers turned into silence, and she listened more than she talked. And later still, she heard her own still, small voice speaking. "What God has done to me will never be forgotten," she said. "His mercy flows wave after wave. He bared his arm and showed his strength, and he scattered the bluffing braggarts. I love my little family," she heard herself say. "It's not the size I expected it to be, and the children in my life didn't come as I hoped they would, but I love the family I've got." That's what the little, still, small voice said to her. "I love the little family I've got. I've been so focused," she said, "on what I don't have, thinking so much about tomorrow that I've missed today." In the 14th century, Teresa of Avila realized something similar. She realized that God dwells in the pots and pans. So if we don't prepare ourselves to bump into God in the run of a typical day, well, we're probably not going to run into God at all. So Hannah's crowded kitchen back home, ironically enough, with too many wives and too many cooks, with the wrong children and nothing but disappointment, well, that was the place where Hannah could find new life, it turns out, if she had eyes to see it. You see, life comes in the place where she had felt most forgotten and forlorn, most dead and dejected. If she was going to have joy, Hannah discovered, it would be in the midst of her pain, not in spite of it, right in the middle of it. There was a volunteer tutor who was asked to go visit a fourth grader in a large city hospital. She took the boy's name and room number and learned in a note from his teacher that they were studying adjectives and adverbs in class. It wasn't until she got to the boy's room that she realized that he was a patient in the hospital's burn unit. No one had prepared her to find a 9-year-old so horribly burned and in so much pain. At this point, she couldn't just turn and leave, so she gathered up her courage and she entered his room. "Hi," she stammered. "I'm the hospital tutor. Your teacher asked me to help you with adjectives and adverbs, so I'm here." And clumsily, she launched into the lesson. The next morning, the phone rang, and it was the nurse back on the unit, and she asked, "What did you do to my patient?" And the tutor immediately began a tearful apology. I'm sorry." And the nurse interrupted her, No, you don't understand. We've been so worried about him. But something happened yesterday with you, because he's fighting now. He's responding to treatment." And later on, the boy explained that he'd given up hope until the tutor came. He said, "I figured that they wouldn't send a teacher to work on adjectives and adverbs if I was going to die." But that's the truth. She went in feeling utterly inadequate, scared to death, at a bedside of somebody who was in agony. And she taught him about adjectives and adverbs, and that was the word from God on that day, that you're going to be all right. And he turned to life. But take another look at your dirty pots and pans. Take a look again at your self and your family, your job, this city, the parts that don't work very well, at the places where you've given up or where the world has given up on you. Look at that, your own pots and pans. Does your hope come where you least expect it? Nod with me. That's where it comes. I don't think it particularly matters what your profession is or what degrees you have. I don't think it matters whether you have children or a husband or a house or mostly heartbreak. Your purpose and my purpose is love. The courageous kind that reaches across boundaries and says, why not? When the world says why and no. Hannah's epiphany is that God shows up in the ordinary round of frustrations and fears, in the questions instead of the answers, in her misery instead of in the child that she longs for, beside a sick bed instead of on a mountaintop, in the heat of a crowded kitchen instead of the cool quiet of a temple. Her purpose isn't motherhood, it's love. And she discovers by listening to that still small voice that she can have that no matter what happens in her body. She can do that and be that. And so can we. Years ago, I complained that the alumni notes of my college all sounded too good to be true. Can you hear me in that the way? Where are the ordinary heroes, I wondered, the men and the women whose lives are punctuated by struggles and losses, whose dignity is hard won? So imagine my pleasure when I read the following entry from my class notes this week. My periodic emails elicit responses from time to time, the editor wrote, some of which suggest that classmates who have not written books, made movies, launched companies, or been appointed by presidents feel like they have nothing to share. Although it's true, he said, that I tend to highlight public successes, this is not the only worthy news of our class. And look at what he wrote next. 10 years ago, my little brother Luke died. Suddenly. Luke was not a fancy guy, he said. He tended bar, he managed restaurants, and in the summer before he passed away, he was a whitewater rafting guide in Wyoming. He never graduated. And he usually looked like Grizzly Adams. But he had a huge impact, his brother said, on people's lives because of his consistent, courageous way through. Every year, he said, we get together with his friends to have a charity golf event so that we can send kids to the summer camp that meant so much to Luke. And we thought initially that we would do the tournament for a year or two, and 10 years later, we just had another one and 100 people showed up, and we've got enough money to send a great big group of kids to have a time that they didn't even know to dream about. Luke lives, he said. Luke's life is a steady, humbling reminder to me of how much little things matter and how rich a life can be even without the accolades. So what's your purpose? God is saving the world through everyday heroes like Hannah and Luke and you. All the time. Through the extraordinary courage that it takes on the most ordinary days to be kind, to keep your dignity and to help somebody else discover theirs, to find treasure in your own trash and in your neighbor's, to hope when you keep on losing. To love. That's what purpose is. That's why we were made. When it looks like your world is ending, let me tell you something. Change is coming. Hold on. Amen.